Hey, man, how's it going?
What's going on? Not much.
Dude, thank
you
so much, Chris.
You should have answered the phone. Who goes there?
You know, I thought about it, but, like, I'm kind of, I've been awake for 20-something hours because of work, so I'm, like, in and out of lucidness right now.
Who am I speaking
cool.
to again? I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Matt. I'm Matt Smith. And thank you so much for coming on our podcast.
Absolutely.
For those of you that don't know, we're talking to Jeremy Gardner, who is the writer, director, producer, star, and bearded badass motherfucker from the new movie, The Battery. And
I'll take that. That's a lot of hyphenates, but I'll take that.
Right. And probably the best thing that a drunk dial's ever done for me.
So. They rarely do work out, do they?
Right. And, you know, Kristen contacted us right after the... I don't even remember what we said during the drunk dial, honestly. We had just finished the podcast, and we were so excited, and we were like, yeah, let's just razz him a bit. And it worked out perfect.
Yeah, that's what it's there for. Call us when you're drunk and razz us.
So that line is for just people to give you the response, right? Like, of what they think of the movie?
Yeah, we just set up, like, a private voicemail account just for people to call up and say whatever they want. We had one guy call in, and he was talking candidly about his, like, he watched our movie because he had diarrhea shits, and he was home from work, and it was pretty fun.
That's fucking awesome. Got to know, like, the intricate details of people's lives when they're watching your film.
Yes.
So, your film is winning a tons of awards right now, despite the fact that it's only took 6,000 to make. And you got that 6,000 from friends and family, right?
Yeah, actually, I just basically went to mostly people I work with, and I said, you know, look, I think I can make this for this amount of money, and I've seen you spend more than $600 at the casino. And strip clubs. So just give me $600 and I'll give you 5% and we'll call it a long-term gamble instead of one blacked out casino weekend gamble. And then if it all goes belly up, you can't fucking hate me for it because it's such a measly amount of money. And, that's pretty much where we got it all. 10 people.
Cool. And okay. Just between you and me, how much of that money was for cigarettes? Like, how many, just a random guess, how many in the movie, how many packs of cigarettes do Mickey and Ben have between them?
First of all, between you and me, I mean, I know I'm recording a podcast. Are you saying you literally have zero listeners between you and me? Or between you and the audience?
Well, between you and me and the audience, I suppose. as vast as
no,
they may be right now.
I'm just fucking with you. Cigarettes, a lot of cigarettes. It was a lot of cigarettes. And actually, you know, this sounds terrible and kids should not listen to this, but, you know, it seems kind of cool going back to the, you know, harkening back to classic movie stars. Smoking a cigarette is cool. James Dean is fucking cool when he smokes a cigarette. But you don't realize how many you have to actually smoke when you actually decide to make a character smoke in a movie. I mean, we are cigarette smokers, but I smoked 5 times as much as I ever have shooting this thing. We actually ended up going down to this little place. There's a store on the way the day we went up to shoot. There's a store where you can walk in and none of the employees can help you because it's against the law if they help you. So they just say, which kind of tobacco would you like? And then you take the point at the tobacco and they say, okay, take that and pour it into this bin. And then pour that bin into this machine, then press start, and it'll, like, roll you a carton of cigarettes for $37.
That's weird. Like, $37? Oh, for a carton. That's not so bad.
For a carton of cigarettes. Yeah, I mean, it's insanely cheap. And they get around it by not manufacturing the cigarettes themselves. Some weird law. But so you kind of go in and roll your own cigarettes, and that's what makes it really cheap. So we bought a bunch of those, but then, of course, we were snobs, and we thought we were saving money, and then we were like, these cigarettes suck, so we just gave all those to the sound guy and bought real ones.
Oh, poor sound guy. He's out there working hard, too.
Yeah, no, he didn't give a shit. He was like, I'll smoke those fucking things. I don't care.
So the movie takes after two baseball players, one a catcher, one a pitcher, and a bullpen. Are you guys actual baseball fans in real life?
Yeah, we're both huge diehard baseball fans. Christian hates it. Christian, my DP who shot the movie, he hates zombie movies and sports, so I honestly don't know how the fuck we pulled this off with him. But me and Adam, we're huge diehard baseball fans.
I got to ask, what's your team?
My team is the Braves. I've been a Braves fan since I was 7 years old. Die hard. Can't wait.
Good news. We can continue this interview. If you would have said Boston, I would have had to have hung up on you.
Come on. Well, where are you again? Aren't you in California?
Yeah, but I'm in San Diego, but the team out here doesn't matter. My team's in Colorado, and we still haven't done shit besides get our ass kicked by the Red Sox. So that's
you're a Rockies fan or
I am a 20-year Rockies fan. Yes.
Oh, that's cool. That's all right then. Wow, that's so weird that you
cool
have
yet.
A big. That's so weird that you have a big fucking hate on for the Red Sox.
Hate. You know, it's everybody can hate the Yankees because it's fun and easy. And I don't know, my team got swept the one time we went to the World Series, so it stings.
So it's just like a grudge. It's not like a rivalry thing. It's just one. It's a grudge match.
It is. It's pure unadulterated hatred.
That's so weird because like I would really hate the fucking Twins then from the early 90s when they fucking just destroyed us and fucking played dirty and
kicked that would make perfect sense.
But the Twins are such a non-issue team. Like, sometimes I forget they're even a team.
Oh, yeah. But the Red Sox are an issue team now.
They're not an issue for your team.
Not yet.
All
right. Everybody's an issue for my team. but on the subject of baseball, there's one scene in the movie that confused me. Like, at the end, I mean, we kind of assume that people saw the movie when we did the podcast, so we put spoiler disclaimers on it. But when you're unraveling the baseball and you hold the core of the baseball at the end, like, that kind of lost me. Like, can you explain that scene a little bit?
What confused you about it? It's so funny. No one literally ever fucking asked about that shot or that sequence.
It drove me, like, I saw it, and I was like, okay, as soon as you tore the cover off, I'm like, well, maybe he's using this as an escape of somehow, but how? And then you're holding the ball, and it's like, okay, well, what's he doing with the ball? Like, I didn't understand if you pocketed it and kind of kept it, like, as a thing, like a tribute to Mickey, or if it was, like, the battery, like, or the ball symbolizes your
You were just leading into it way too much.
You know, maybe I'm giving you too much credit.
That you are giving me way too much credit, actually. No, it's funny that you say, how's he going to get out? Originally, in the original script, there was a scene where they first use arrows through the windows into the zombies, but the zombies end up piling up outside the door, so it doesn't help them. But then I had the idea that I was going to have him unravel the baseball and use, because there's over, like, I think there's over, like, 200 feet or 200 yards of yarn or twine inside a baseball or something. So I was going to have him, it was the most ridiculous James Bond thing. He was going to unravel all the string, fire an arrow out into the field, and then Mickey was going to run out, put the keys on the string, and Ben was going to be able to pull them back into the car. And I was like, that's fucking absurd. But then when I was sitting in the – it was just absurd. But when I was sitting in the back of the car, I was like, oh, this will be kind of, you know, kind of a beautiful moment of just, like, unraveling the baseball and how everything is unraveled around their relationship and it's all over now. I just thought it was kind of symbolic of just kind of getting down to the core of the primal center of Ben's personality and also kind of pretty obviously symbolic that Ben and Mickey's time together had completely unraveled. But it was really just a fun thing to do, sit down and tear that baseball apart.
See, it's more complex than you give yourself credit for. There's a deeper meaning there. So Jorge is kind of like the – Jorge's my buddy that's doing the podcast with me. He's kind of the more technical nerd guy, so he definitely wanted me to ask him some technical questions, like what was the most difficult aspect with securing locations? Like, did you find that to be a really hard thing to do, or did you kind of just guerrilla shoot wherever you wanted?
We actually shot if we had shot around where I live right now, which is in a very, very kind of I-95, like, New York corridor where everything's fast-paced, we would have found more trouble. We ended up shooting far more north. And once we got up there, we realized it had a very southern vibe to it. Everyone was really laid back. And we had to go and talk to, you know, the mayor of the town, the district, the town selectmen, to just kind of get permission to shoot when we were shooting on roads, because we needed to, like, close those roads down. But they were all pretty helpful. They were just like, okay, when do you need it? And, all right, here's your permit. They didn't ask for anything. We shot a scene in the gas station that we ended up cutting, but we walked in and we were like, hi, can we shoot up the movie here? And they were like, okay. And we were like, it's going to be, like, late at night. Somebody will have to be here after you're closed. And they're like, that's okay. And I was like, all right. So that people were pretty friendly. But for the majority of the stuff we shot on a Girl Scout camp that's been decommissioned for about almost 20 years. So all the, you know, trees are growing through the floorboards and shit. We got permission. One of our other producers actually happened to go to that camp when he was younger. And he knew the caretaker of it, although the guy wasn't clearly taking very good care of it because it was in fucking shambles. But that was perfect for us because it looked great. So we got permission to shoot there, and it was really, that was it.
Didn't have to set up locations or anything. It was just already disheveled.
That was it. I mean, the hardest thing to maintain was the road that we shot the final sequence on, where Annie and Jerry are there, where they get stuck, was right down the street from houses and a school. So we could only get it for 3 days, which is why we shot a majority of the end sequence in a garage with blankets on the windows and sun lamps outside, because we just didn't have enough time on the road.
Oh, so the end scene in the car, that's mostly shot in a garage?
Yep. As soon as the blankets go up, we are not on that road anymore.
Oh, look at that. We're uncovering truth left and right.
Well, we had 3 days on that road, and then Christian turns to me and he goes, you know, you have about 75 fucking scenes scheduled for 3 days with extras. It's never going to happen. So we had to get a little creative with the blankets. And I actually justified it by the fact that the longer you stare those zombies out the windows, the more you're going to just start, like, your eye's going to be drifting and looking at the extras. What's that guy doing? How bad is that makeup, or how good is that makeup, or why is that one looking at the camera? So the easier was to just get rid of it and refocus on the characters, which is what the movie was about anyway.
You know, it's actually kind of refreshing to see somebody put so much thought in little details, you know, just about the idea of your eye wandering and stuff like that. And it shows that you've actually put a lot of thought into the smaller things in the movie. Like, there was one thing, and this could have been completely by accident, but the scene in the car where Ben kind of finally has enough, and he, you know, he's like, shut the fuck up, and he punches the ceiling, and the dome light falls down. Was that dome light intentionally falling down, or was that just an accident that happened to be played off really well?
That was an accident. It was a total accident. But it kept happening when I kept punching it, so Adam kind of knew it was going to happen the next time I punched it, so I think he was, in his mind, ready to fix it. I didn't know he was going to fix it, like put it back in, but I kind of had an idea it was going to fall because it kept falling every time I punched the ceiling.
Dude, I thought that was perfect because I didn't know if it was intentional, but I thought, oh, they were really stoked when they got the car. Look at all the room. And now, as Ben's finally, like, breaking down, he punches the car, and the car's starting to break down. So everything they loved is kind of crumbling around them.
I love it.
We overthought all of it.
Eating into shit. I love it. No, it's great.
Yeah, you should talk to my wife, because I do this kind of thinking about all things, and it fucking pisses her off.
You're like, was that worm really significant about, like, us being, like, pointless on this earth, just little creatures looking at? I'm like, no, it's just a worm, man.
Yeah, the little cricket that you were poking on the roof, that was some, like, cosmic shit going on there. I don't even want to touch that.
Come on. What do I mean? Yeah.
The whole butterfly effect thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So you guys have won a shitload of awards for this thing, right?
I mean, for
being an incredibly low budget film, you've won quite a handful of awards.
Yeah, so I think more humbling to me are the awards that we actually won. It's not the amount of the awards; it's the specific awards. Like winning the audience award at all the festivals we've gone to has been really big, because that was probably the scariest thing about releasing this movie is that, is anybody going to care about my slow meandering zombie-less zombie movie? So to win audience awards is really, really reassuring. And confidence boosting that wanting to do something a little different is a good thing. The award we won in Amsterdam at the Imagine Film Festival is the same award that Silence of the Lambs won. From Dusk Till Dawn, Donnie Darko, The Raid. I mean, they all won that award. So there was no way in my mind we were going to win that award. And when we did, it was like, holy shit. I mean, we are on that list now, which is awesome.
So did you ever think that, you know, it could get to this level, or did you think this is kind of just something I want to do, and if people like it, people like it, but I'm not really expecting much of it?
I mean, I don't want to sound like an ego freak, but you have to at least believe at some level that it's going to succeed beyond your expectations. So I thought if we pulled everything off that it could certainly have a shelf life where I wouldn't have even bothered to do it. That's what I kept telling everybody when it was still just me and a script, was that, trust me, like, there are fanboys out there. There are people who like zombie movies, but they keep getting the same shit over and over. They're going to rally around this. I promise you, like, people, if we get it in front of the right eyes, those people will respect what we're trying to do. Even if it's rough around the edges, people will champion it. And that's what's happening. So yeah, I guess I kind of had an idea that it could succeed. But I'll tell you what, man. When I saw the first cut and it was 2 hours and 19 minutes and there was no color grading and no sound effects, I was like, well, we did a big fat fucking turd, but at least we did it. But then once you come down from that horror and you start cutting scenes and trimming everything and tightening it, it's, you start to shape it up and you're like, oh no, maybe we made something interesting.
And you're still working the day job?
Still working the day job. Yes, sir. Going to work tomorrow.
And you still had time to squeeze into our schedule, or into our podcast. That's fucking awesome.
Wow.
So I know you're probably busy, so I'll just hit a few more questions. With the movie getting as good of a reception as it has, are there any more plans for, like, a theater tour? I saw that you did have an idea for maybe not a sequel, but at least a more in-depth view of the orchard and what goes on at the orchard.
So, to answer the first part of the question, I would love to do a theater tour. I think one of the things we're really trying to do is be completely open and accessible to people. We know that we made a movie for very little money, and we know there's a lot of people out there who want to try to make movies for very little money, so we want to be completely open and accessible to an audience. And I think a theater tour of maybe, you know, film campuses or film-savvy communities would be really great, to just screen it and then have people ask us about it afterwards. So I would love to set that up, and hopefully we can sometime by the end of this year. And then The Orchard, yeah, I do have an idea for a sequel, but I don't know that I would. I don't know that I would pursue it unless, you know, people wanted it. I think this movie, the battery is already fairly self-indulgent, so I think to do a sequel to a movie that nobody like sees would be really self-indulgent. I don't know if I could. I don't know if I could stoop that low.
Well, I don't know about nobody seeing it. It's the number 2 horror movie on iTunes of all times, right? At least yesterday, I think it was.
I don't know where it's at on the list right now. I don't know about all time. Maybe right now. But, yeah, it's doing really well on iTunes, but it's also doing really, really well on Pirate Bay and shit, so,
yeah, do you mind talking about that a little bit?
Steal it. Maybe if all the people who steal it give us $5, we'll make a sequel.
You thought about putting, like, a donate button on your website or something? Just being like,
yeah,
I know you guys are going to be dicks and steal our shit anyways, just give us what you think it's worth.
Well, we thought about that, but we do have a contractual obligation with Film Buff, who is digitally distributing the movie, and I think to put a donate button would almost be to entice people. It might entice people to steal it.
Right.
So yeah, we're not going to go that route right now. But piracy. Nothing will change your mind about piracy quicker than putting a piece of art out there and having it stolen 50 times for every one time it's bought. But, it is what it is. Hopefully those people will like the movie and then come back around to the next one and feel it's worth their money this time.
Okay, well, with the movie riding high right now and the release of, I think it's $200 million zombie flick in World War Z, so it's kind of a David versus Goliath thing. What's next for the Battery and the crew of the Battery now?
I don't know, hopefully we can turn it into some form of a job. If I can make the same amount of money I'm making waiting tables, making movies, I'll do this, you know, happily for the rest of my life. But right now we've got some more big festivals coming up. None of them have been publicly announced yet, but some really big international festivals, which is part of the reason why the international release has been delayed. I know we got a lot of people from around the world, very kind people, asking how they can watch the movie. And unfortunately, we've just gotten some really good opportunities to screen at some festivals, so we're delaying international so that we can, you know, maintain the premiere status for those countries. So, we're going to try to get to a few of those festivals and then release it internationally as soon as we can, and then I'm almost done with a new script right now, and hopefully we will we'll get rolling on that in the next 6 months, 4 months.
Can you give us a little hint of what that new script is about, or is that way off?
It's a monster movie. It's going to be another Jeremy Gardner take, a character-driven take, this time on a monster movie instead of zombies. More of a monster movie about marriage, basically.
Oh, I'm going to keep my mouth shut on that one. I want to stay married. Thank you.
Okay.
Last two questions. Let's say, you know, the Battery gets picked up by some big company that's got rights to another large scale horror movie, you know, like a Halloween, a Friday the 13th, something. And they do like a kind of cross promotion, Freddy vs. Jason, and Ben finds himself in another movie. What kind of movie what franchise or kind of movie do you think Ben would thrive in and actually survive in?
That's not a zombie world, like taking him out of the zombie world.
It could be. I mean, we've seen him, you know, escape a horde of, you know, 20, 30 slow moving zombies. You could want to put him in a Dawn of the Dead remake type situation where they're just messed out and running at you, or it could be slasher.
I don't want them to be fast. I'm fat and slow. I mean, can't be fast. Ben would die if they were fast.
The catcher, you can't run.
Question. I was so certain you were going to say, ask me which movie I would, like, which remake would I, like, sell out and direct. But
I know you're going to do the Reapers and or the Angels. I know that's coming down the road, but everybody's going to ask you that anyways.
No, that's what I said. It's an interesting, you usurped my expectations there. So I would say Ben might be interesting to see Ben in, like, a more of, like, a dystopian world, like kind of like a Terminator world or something.
That could be kind of cool. I think he would fit in really well.
He's just really good in the post-apocalypse. So anything that happens post-apocalyptically, I think he'd be okay. I think he'd find some canned food in a place that's, like, just stay off the beaten path and just eat and, like, I don't know, jerk off or something.
That's Mickey's job to jerk off.
Yeah, well, I'm sure Ben has his moments.
He just screams butt naked in the shower or in a waterfall.
He didn't see what he was doing right before that. He was
is that why he was screaming? Serenity now. You got that release, huh?
That's because it was fucking freezing.
And final question. I'm a fanatic, and Jorge not so much. So I wanted to see if, without thinking, you were able to quote a line from the movie Big Trouble in Little China. I figure with a beard like that, you've got to be familiar with the movie.
Oh, God. I've seen Big Trouble in Little China like 10 times, but I haven't seen it in like 15 years. That was like my HBO movie when I was a kid. I can't remember. I remember the weird, scary old Asian guy and Kurt Russell. I don't remember. I can't quote a line, though. Thanks for putting me on the spot and calling me out.
Good. I did, because with a beard like that, I figure, you know, it's got a level of badassery that you should only be embracing Jack Burton with your badass
beard.
You're right.
No, you know what? Forget Big Trouble. Let's take Ben and put him in the original thing with Kurt Russell and do a battle of the beards. Because Kurt Russell in Carpenter's The Thing has the greatest horror beard of all time.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, The Thing is actually where we got the name for our podcast. The book it was written about was originally called Who Goes There?
Yes. Very nice.
And it was you that actually forced us to pick that name. We were going to email you first about doing the show, and we're like, fuck, well, let's not email him from our personal address. Let's at least look somewhat professional. And we think,
so
we're like, what's a horror?
Pick a name real quick.
Yes, we're like, what's a horror movie we both love? And we went through the trivia on IMDb for The Thing, and we're like, boom, Who Goes There? Done.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a good name.
Cool. Well, Ben, or Ben, shit, I've been calling you Ben for so
yes.
long.
Yes.
Jeremy, I appreciate your time, and this has been a fantastic interview, and thank you for taking a chance on a upstart young podcast.
Hey, it was my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me, and I'd love to come on as a guest later and just talk about someone else's movie.
We can definitely make that happen. And through your recommendation, Jorge and I are both going to be reading Reapers Are the Angels. So
oh, awesome!
In your Reddit AMA.
Yes, it's such a great book. It's awesome. I can't wait to hear what you think about it.
All right, man. Well, thank you, and good luck in everything.
All right. Thank you very much, brother. You too.
Bye.
Bye.